Blog Talk Radio. Hi, welcome. This is syndicated columnist Amy Alcon with Advice Goddess Radio. Nerd your way to a better life with the best brains in science. Now, I once hugged a smart car. No, I am not kidding. I hugged a smart car. It was really cute and pink. It was on the streets of Beverly Hills. My boyfriend was with me, and I swear to God, he tried to evaporate. He didn't succeed. But believe it or not, there's a very good evolutionary reason for what I did, and also for why a man would be very, very unlikely to do the same, although he might try to have sex with it if he were really, really drunk. Now, the reasons for this, for the car hugging by women or by this woman, come out of some very interesting research and thinking on our evolved sex differences. And here to tell us about them and how they affect our lives is developmental psychologist and researcher Dr. Joyce Benenson. Her book we'll be discussing tonight is Warriors and Worriers, The Survival of the Sexes. Hello, Joyce.
Hello.
Hi. So now I just heard you talk at the Northeastern Evolutionary Psychology Conference in Boston. You were part of a very riveting closing act, and you showed a slide from primatologist Richard Wrangham. He had shot a slide of a female chimp holding a stick. Tell us what the chimp was doing with the stick and what it means vis-a-vis the contentions that we are the way we are, we behave the way we do because of, say, television.
Okay, well, a lot of people assume that sex differences come from socialization, even though there's almost no studies showing this to be the case. In this particular study by Richard Wrangham and Sonia Kallenberg, what they did is they found that pre-adolescent chimpanzees behave differently depending on their sex. So the females will carry around a stick in the same way that they would carry around a baby. So they would cuddle it, cradle it, rock it, do all kinds of things that look like they're preparing to take care of a baby, just like a young human girl would do. In contrast, the males will carry around a stick like a weapon, and they'll poke it and they'll prod and they'll, you know, hit with it. So a lot of people got very upset when they heard this because they thought, this is impossible. We all know that the reason little girls play with dolls is because they've been socialized to do that. And we all know that boys play with weapons and transportation vehicles because they've been socialized to do that. But I guess what I always find disturbing is, how do we know this?
Yeah, and you look at, it's very important to me what you do. You look at both non-humans, animals, and you look at very, very young children. And your book comes out of the research on both. So tell us a little bit about why that's important.
What's important exactly?
Oh, that basically that you're looking at behaviors that you see over and over again in not only in males, but in very, very young children, in infants and in animals.
Okay,
go ahead.
So basically, I have built my theory on looking at as young children as I can from really 6 months onward, and trying to find evidence from around the world that girls do the same thing over and over, that they really have an interest very early in taking care of real babies or taking care of dolls. And the boys from age 2 onward are fascinated by weapons and transportation vehicles across societies. As early, you can even show them pictures of it, even as early as 3 months, and boys are more interested in those kinds of objects than girls are. And if you see it over and over and over again, it's hard to believe that there isn't some biological basis, because how could this be socialized so early? And a lot of mothers will tell you, no, I really don't treat my daughter versus my son differently. So then you have to ask, well, how did this come about?
Yeah, and this is what your book is about. And you talk about how men evolve to defend against an enemy attack, and women evolve to care for a vulnerable child. And you note that these require different skills. And in fact, my little opening about the smart car, now maybe you don't agree with me about objects, but teeny dogs and teeny little objects. And we had these cute little Dutch salt shakers. They're little Dutch shoes from a flight we once took. And it just seems that girls have a greater interest in those kind of cute little things and vulnerable people. So, you know, you can tell me if it transcends from humans to objects, but men don't look for cute the way women do.
Yes, I mean, I really do think that that's true. And I think, you know, one of the things that makes females females is, you know, this absolute devotion to lifelong caring of vulnerable, well, I don't want to say just objects, but vulnerable, obviously, babies and individuals of all ages and bunny rabbits and cute, you know, animals. And I think what happens for, you know, for females is we have these lifelong, really, projects, and they never go away. We're always taking care of somebody who is in need. And so that's a whole different way of looking at the world than a male who is not so interested in something that is a lifelong vulnerable individual, and they're not constantly looking for vulnerability. Rather, they have a very different focus, as I describe in my book.
Oh, yes, and I love this. And before, we're going to take men first, and we'll go on to women. But I want to say first, because, you know, there are positives and negatives with each, but I just want to say what you show throughout is that many of our stereotypical beliefs about boys and girls and men and women do not hold true. The stuff we want to believe, the stuff we say, well, the stuff we don't like, that's socialized by television and by we learned that we're taught that. I really was surprised when I finished reading your book to find that women, especially unrelated women, are really not very nice to each other. And in fact, they're pretty much underhanded plotting competitors. But we'll get to that. I want to talk about men first. And you say that men and women evolve to have very different fears, and that you believe that boys and men's specialty is worrying about enemies.
Absolutely. So what I find in 2 and 3 year old boys, as they create the most amazing and most colorful and most creative enemies out of anything. So they can come up with aliens, and they can come up with sea monsters, and they can come up with mummy man, and they can come up with all kinds of creatures that they must defeat. And what's so fascinating about it is they can go on and on and on, and the girls look on and they roll their eyes, even, you know, at 2 or 3, and they just find these boys the most boring things. And the boys can stay all day long with more and more, you know, more and more people joining them and becoming interested in their fantasy play. And it really is not something you see on TV. Yes, there are, you know, there's Batman and Superman and Spider-Man and so forth, but these boys go way beyond that, and they're fascinated. It's their most favorite thing to do is think about the enemy and how to trap it and kill it and prevent it from harming anyone.
And this is fun with a purpose. And I'm going to quote something from your book. Throughout most of human history, men and women have specialized in different behaviors necessary to ensure the survival of their children to adulthood. So boys have a love of play fighting, a love of competition, and a love of weapons that girls just do not. And so this helps us survive how?
Okay, so basically my research comes from the fact that our two closest living genetic relatives, chimpanzees and bonobos, are very, very genetically similar to us. And chimpanzees are the only primate species that engage in warfare the way that we do. So the question is, how could it be that we engage in war across the whole world and that it's generally males? And that it's generally males between the ages of 18 and 25. So why does this happen? And then what I tried to do is say, what are some of the ingredients that I see in really young boys that might lead to this love, I would say, of warfare? And the reason I say that is when I put little boys together and I say, hey, you can do whatever you want, nobody's watching, what do they do? And these are very rich boys oftentimes. They will get into group-on-group fighting. And they love it. They really are having a great time, and very rarely do they actually hurt each other. And so what I'm arguing is if you love enemies, this is what you most want to think about. And you really enjoy competition. And you enjoy doing it as a group. One of the best things you can do is engage in play warfare. And so to me, this is something that may have evolved based on our chimpanzee heritage to lead boys and later men into engaging in intergroup conflicts.
And now when you say love enemies, you mean love the challenge of enemies. I just wanted to make that clear.
yes, that is what I mean. I don't mean, you know, they're trying to befriend the enemy, just the opposite. They just like the idea of, you know, fighting starships from other galaxies, of coming up with creatures who could attack. They can be human, they can be non-human, they can be completely, you know, science fiction. But love getting together with others and defeating the enemy.
And I love this bit. You contrast their activities with those of girls, and we'll talk about, you had some examples from studies you did with balls and puppets and things. You said that every one of the more than 50 preschool teachers you've met described boys shooting bullets out of a doll's head, transporting ammunition in baby carriages, or tying up enemies with jump ropes. And you write that if the right materials and tools are unavailable, then the boy must rely on his imagination to perform duties. You just don't see girls doing this with their dolls.
Absolutely not. I mean, I really don't. And I find, you know, both girls and teachers who are generally female find the boys so irritating. You know, the boys are racing and sometimes racing right over the girls' heads or feet or whatever to defeat the enemy. And there's a bunch of boys doing it. And the teacher is going mad because she can't control them. And the boys are completely lost in a world that doesn't exist, at least in their preschool. And it's hard for me to believe that their parents are reading them stories about war or even that they're watching war on TV. And this is what they're doing. They're completely engaged in a different life. Meanwhile, the girls are in Western societies, the girls are in the kitchen, they're, you know, cooking, they're taking care of the baby, they're putting the baby to bed. Sometimes they have to go to the hospital if the baby's very sick and they have to take care of the baby and bring it home. But it really is different worlds. And as much as people want to say it's all socialized, it's so young that one sees that.
Yeah, that was a striking thing. You keep talking about all these studies, some of them are yours, some of them are not, where infants, that even as infants, boys and girls show these differences in behavior. And you also, for those people who think, oh, come on, really, it is socialization, you know, even if they, I guess they think those chimps have TV, they get HBO. you also talk about the physical and hormonal differences in men and women. Men, and actually, this is one of those bad things, men are disproportionately the murderers of our species. And before anybody gets miffy about my saying that, remember the story of women here isn't so nice either, but we'll get to that. So tell us about violence and aggression in men and how they are physically prepared for those to be violent and aggressive.
Okay, so in every society that for which we have data, men are 10 times more likely than women to kill. And it's amazing because the murder rate is so high in the United States, and obviously it's even higher in places where there's civil unrest right now. But it's tiny in places like Canada and Japan. Nonetheless, it's always the same sex ratio, basically 9-1 or 10-1 favoring males. And males are killing males, and females, you know, barely murder anyone. It's so rare. But when they kill, sometimes they'll kill other females. Mostly they might kill, you know, a husband. But it really is just so universal. And so what you can argue is that, you know, from when boys, you know, start becoming interested in the enemy, there is this love of what I call propulsion, or taking a stick or a gun or a sword or whatever and making that kind of movement and defeating an enemy and doing it with other boys and being competitive. And you put a few of those ingredients together, and what you get is the potential, if it's needed, to defeat others and to do it with lethal force.
Right. And this isn't to say that men are violent. It's just to say that they have the capability for this defense. It's very, very important. I want to go on to male competition. Now, reading about how men are competitors in your book, it seemed like, well, this is a competitive ideal. It was very, very interesting to see it sex differentiated the way you do. So tell us how men compete and how they differ from women in that.
Okay, so I think the key thing is everybody thinks that men are competitive and not sociable, and women are cooperative and very sociable. And that's what I overturn most of all in my book, because I just think that's really much too simplistic. So yes, men compete over mates, and men compete for money, and as far as I can tell, little boys compete over anything possible. They will compete over who can make the best paper airplanes, who can dance the fastest, who can, you know, run across the room, whatever they can think of, they'll compete over it. And they love it. What's interesting about it is then they can turn right around and cooperate with those same competitors. And who do they cooperate against? That's what they do. They can cooperate then against another group or against an enemy. And then they'll go back when the enemy dissipates or whatever it is that they're afraid of goes away. Then they'll start competing with each other again. And it's back and forth and back and forth. With girls, you never see that overt competition. So girls are very polite, and they smile, and they never beat each other up, and they, you know, they will never say something like, you know, you idiot, how could you do that? And so everybody thinks, you know, sugar and spice and everything nice. The problem is everybody assumes the opposite of competition is cooperation. And I don't see that at all. I see fabulous cooperation amongst the boys. So when whether they're cooperating to build a castle, or they're cooperating because they're afraid of a shark or a snake or a murderer or somebody from, you know, some other galaxy coming, they will get together and try to cooperate to be able to stop that enemy. And the girls, they oftentimes engage in parallel play. That's what I see, and I've seen this in a number of societies, where they will, okay, I'm on the phone, you know, talking to the hospital about whatever, maybe even the vet, about my sick dog, and the other one is nearby washing the dishes, and the other one is putting the baby to sleep, and the other one might be pretending to be the teacher. But it's not so cooperative. It's more parallel.
Yeah, that is so fascinating. And I wanted to mention the myth of antisocial males that you write about. You say that we think of women as a sociable sex, but you say that even boys in gangs are highly social amongst each other, even though their behavior is disruptive and antisocial to the rest of the community. So they're cohesive. I mean, there's just such cohesiveness. That was the thing I kept seeing in these male groups you describe, in the male, even when there's competition.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it's kind of so counterintuitive to people, because the idea of antisocial implies that boys are not sociable. But most of the havoc that males wreak within society is incredibly sociable. So they're doing it as a bunch of other males. And, you know, when I always say, what could be more sociable than warfare? And whether that's gang warfare or actual military warfare, it doesn't matter, because what these males are doing is under the most difficult situations, where they many times they smell, they haven't washed in weeks, they're living in terrible situations, whether it's because they're poor or because they're in the military, under fire, whatever it is, and they're getting along just fine. And they might have a huge fight, two of them, and they beat each other up, and they actually, you know, draw blood and whatever, but they just make up, and then they're back together again, and their key idea is the other gang, or they're fighting in a military unit, or, of course, in business and government, the same kinds of things happen, a little less extreme. But it's incredibly cooperative. So what I call it is cooperative competition.
And now, where women are very uncomfortable, and we'll get to this, about one person being superior, another girl being the top dog, they want everyone to be equal. Men, this is so interesting. Boys are drawn to peers who are the toughest, who would provide the most competition for them. They're not uncomfortable with that. They're actually drawn to those tough guy peers who are better than they are.
Yes, and this is something that, you know, I just find so important, because if you're in the work environment, if you're in a school environment, if you really want to excel, you need to form an alliance with people who are better than you. And that way, you're able to emulate them, you're able to learn their skills, maybe they can help you move up. It's really, really beneficial. And males are so group-oriented that even though they fight like crazy to be the alpha, they really do respect the person who wins. And so then they can form an alliance and they can work their way up. In contrast, what I find with little girls and what I've done in a recent paper that came out last year with psychology professors is that females have a very hard time accepting somebody who's not exactly dead even, as they call it in business. So, you know, females have a hard time thinking, oh, you're superior to me. Who are you? And if somebody's inferior to them, why waste my time? And so what you get is females having these lovely, quote, egalitarian relationships that everybody says are so wonderful. But what everyone ignores is that girls and women don't feel so comfortable with people who are better than them and who could help them in many ways. And they don't feel so comfortable spending their time helping others who also could use their help.
Yeah, that was so fascinating about how women need to be covert about their ambitions, covert about their successes, that to ladies bear to other women was really a dangerous and bad thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is what do we do as women? So if I meet a woman and she says to me, oh, I'm such an idiot, you know, rather than being able to say, oh, geez, you know, that's too bad, or, you know, I'm sorry you feel like that, I know the response that's expected of me, and that is, I'm such an idiot, too. Now, where does that get us? You know, here we see, and I've seen this with such confident women, you know, and Sheryl Sandberg is saying, well, lean in. But you can't lean in, and it's not just because of the men. It's because part of leaning in is saying, hey, I'm really good at what I do. And if you say that, then that you've lost a lot of women friends. And I see this all the time. Oh, I'm so fat. Oh, I'm so bad at this. Oh, I've done such a bad job, you know, raising my child or whatever. And the expected retort has to be me too. But then what you end up doing is both of you are putting yourselves down and not able to say, you know, actually, I'm really good at this. And then maybe you could help because, you know, maybe you could help me get as good as you. And or maybe, you know, I'd really like to learn how to do that. And I think it is just easier for men to respect that, you know, achievement than women. And so what do you end up doing as a woman? You say, oh my gosh, there must be something I'm really bad at. Even if you're having a good day, oh yeah, look at me. You know, I did this thing wrong. I can't believe it. And my boss is so upset with me. And that's what the conversation turns to.
Yeah, this is so awful. We have to backtrack and explain about how the fear is this big driving thing for women. But this is so important what you said. And I love this. This is one of my reasons for living and doing what I do, that you gave us the science behind why this lean in thing. I mean, people just, they put this stuff out there, this advice out there. It's based in no research. And they don't understand that it's not practical based on what real human behavior is that we see in research. And this is so right that women, you know, this, you said it so perfectly in your book. You say men share activities, women share vulnerabilities. And I better tell people your book title because I've been too fascinated to stop you. It is Warriors and Worriers, The Survival of the Sexes by Dr. Joyce Benenson. So it's a really good book. You can buy a copy at Amazon just by clicking in the book title and the show link. So click away, you'll get some great reading and you'll support the show. So men share activities, women share vulnerabilities, this thing where you have to show that you're not competition, that you kind of suck and, you know, you're just muddling along. I mean, this is not a path to greatness. Well, it might be, but you're going to get there and it's going to be a lonely path.
That's exactly right. And what's so amazing is when you interview or just speak casually with women who are really successful, they will tell you what a hard time they have, how they're imposters, how they're really not good. And, you know, number one, it undermines their self-confidence. And number two, then you are expected to also not be very good. And it's very confusing and it's very deceptive and it's just not true. And I think part of the reason is any woman who goes out there and says to other women, forget about men, to other women, that I am a success in any way, gets a backlash. And, you know, my studies show this with young kids. That's what's so amazing. And even before my studies, when you look at the research on 3 to 5 year old boys and girls speech forms, boys will say, I'm great at this, you're an idiot. And then the retort will be, yeah, that may be true, but I'm great at this other thing and you're no good at it. And it goes back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, teachers always hated that. And yes, it's irritating because it takes up a lot of space and time and volume and so forth. But girls can never say that, even as young as 3 to 5. And this is around the world. They'll say, well, would you like to do this? And what they mean is, I really want to do this and I'm good at it. Can you play with me? But they don't say it like that. And so it really is from that early an age. So yes, I believe in socialization. It's super strong, but part of the socialization is other young boys and young girls. And it's not just television. It's not just parents or brothers and sisters. It is other girls saying, listen, I'm not going to like you if you start to be better than me in any way. And so then you internalize this idea that really I'm no good, and God forbid I won't have any friends. And so therefore I'm going to say I'm no good, because it's better to have friends than to be great at what I'm doing. And that's what I think it comes down to for a lot of girls.
And you explained that this comes out of the sex difference in fearfulness, how girls and women are much more fearful based on how they bear really the sole responsibility for survival of children. Yeah, you know, men are out there, but if a woman disappears, there's a big problem, you know, in her child being cared for. And you actually say fear is a girl's suit of armor. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Tell us about fear in women and girls and why it is actually adaptive.
Okay, so I think this is absolutely right, crucial to how we live our lives. I mean, boys and men take risks from, I think it's, you know, from 1 year on. If you look at the number of children who come to an emergency room, and this is from China and the U.S. and Canada and all over the world, you will see even as early as infancy, there are more males that end up in the emergency room. Why? They fall down the stairs, they get bitten by a snake, they, you know, get their hand in the fire, whatever it is. Boys do this all the time, and girls don't do that. It's very hard for me to imagine mothers are saying, okay, boy, you can do this, you know, but don't do it if you're my daughter. So what I think is that girls have learned very early on to take care of themselves, and it's absolutely crucial that they do, not to have accidents, not to get into fights with others, not to contract any kind of disease, not to get eaten by anything. And the reason they do that is because they are the ones ultimately who will keep a baby alive. And it used to be the case that if the mother wasn't alive, that was it, her baby died or her child died, because nobody else could invest in her child. Only she would. You know, the father would go off and marry somebody else, and the other female, you know, the woman's relatives, they have other people to take care of. So women really are, in the end, solely responsible. And it's not the case that fathers can't be very helpful, grandmothers, you know, babysitters, and so forth, but it really does come down to a woman as to whether her child survives. And in this modern world, it can be different, but that's how it has been, with a 50% mortality rate up until very recently for children.
Yeah, and I was very struck by how you talk about female friendships being fragile. You say that women actually have fragile relationships with the unrelated women because it's the family members they can count on. So they're always sort of cagey around other women in some sort of way. And that's sort of amazing. But I understand why from your book.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that people don't want to hear, and they hate me for saying it. But I've looked at this for, you know, 25 years, and what I see is this natural affinity between males. And I can never understand, why are the males getting along so well? And wherever I look, and this is all over the world, young boys and young men can just hit it off. They can go out and they can play basketball together. They don't even know the name of the person they're playing with. They can have a huge fight with their best friend, and then they're back together. One stabs the other. Even so, they can get back together. And okay, how can they do this and why? And I started looking at this, and, you know, there are boys by age 7, the UN reports this, that start fighting in wars, actual wars. And, you know, you have to be able to get along with whoever's there on your side really well, or you're going to be killed by the enemy. And so you see this natural affinity, and it does make sense to me because of warfare, wherever that began, that males need to really bond together. And they can't be too picky about whether somebody, you know, moved their cup or you know, stole something from them or even stabbed them because of the enemy. In contrast, this is my big problem. What is it that unrelated women can do for each other? Because if we have children, and if our children are so dependent, and if we have a hard enough time taking care of them and need help with our own children, how can we possibly help another woman? And so there I say, you know, in the end, and I could be wrong, but I just don't see how it can be that an unrelated woman can be that helpful to another unrelated woman. And as much as you share the same problems unrelated women do, and so there's, you know, you want to get along with them, in the end, your mother, your husband, even your mother-in-law is going to be more devoted to her genes, her investment in your children, than your best friend is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to just mention social exclusion, which women are masters of. And that's primarily a female strategy. As you're saying, the guys, they suck each other and they don't want to eliminate a fellow community member. And girls, you did these studies where girls were just awful to the newcomer. And so girls, they really are very vicious in ways, you know, they're supposed to be nicer because girls, you say, smile and are polite. But, you know, the way of punishing those and sort of getting all the resources for themselves through social exclusion, it's really pernicious and common.
Yeah, it is. And again, it goes back to the what I see early on is that boys really are interested in this group-based competition. And so any boy who you can trust, any boy who's into this, which is into play fighting and hating the enemy and but being interested in the enemy and, you know, cooperating to defeat the enemy in a competition, any boy who can kind of get with that program is excellent, right? Because every boy has some skill and their strength in numbers against the enemy. But for girls, there isn't this cooperation that I can see. I mean, it would be lovely if we could say, okay, you know, mothers, let's get together, let's take care of our children jointly, and one of us will work and make the money, and the others can take care of the children, or, you know, several of us can work and so forth. But in the end, you want your own child to do better, and you want to invest as much as you can in your own child, and that just doesn't seem to work. Where it should work the most is in polygynous societies, and that's where the women, if they're not related to each other, if they're not sisters, are the meanest to each other. They actually will hurt each other's children. They will scratch each other's faces. And so, you know, what I find, and this is actually what chimpanzees do as well, is the females are more likely to shove one another out of the community because there's a big advantage. If there are fewer women around, there's fewer women who could take away your, well, inhuman mate and your real estate, whether that's a chimpanzee who's got the best fruiting tree and that's where she lives, or a human who's got the best house and that's where she lives, another woman is a threat.
Yeah, no, it's just so stunning the stuff you say. And again, it's all supported by research. So now, I mean, other than understand all of this, that this is how people are and how non-human primates are also, can you give us any final words about what this all tells us about our lives now, how we live now?
Well, I mean, in modern society, obviously we can do so much and we can override anything that might be innate. But I do see over and over people saying to women, you know, here's advice. You've got to climb the hierarchy. You know, you've got to, you know, lean in. You've got to do all these things so that you can make tons and tons of money and whatever. And I'm just thinking, wait a second. How does this work with taking care of children, taking care of people who help us take care of children, and people get ill and people have, you know, mental problems and people, and, you know, women need these people to be a part of their lives and to be a part of their children's lives. And so just devoting yourself to climbing the ladder at work is really, really hard for women. And add to that the fact that men do discriminate against women. They absolutely do. And women don't support each other because it's very hard to invest in an unrelated female when you have to take care of your children. And, you know, there's so many other things you have to do. So for me, I think the debate out there is really not based on the empirical facts in terms of what women want to do with their lives. And it leads to a lot of women feeling really badly about themselves and a lot of women pushing their daughters to, you know, kind of attract the men and have lots of friends and achieve and keep a lid on all of that, not tell anybody about it. And so girls are getting many mixed messages, and it's very hard for them to cope.
Yeah. And I think what you've brought us is just, here's the reality. So you can't have it all. And I think that this is really valuable. And just want to tell people, I've been talking with Dr. Joyce Benenson. Her terrific book is Warriors and Warriors, The Survival of the Sexes. Thank you so much. Really great show.
Thank you.